Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Baseline Inside Fordham Basketball. I'm Don Dwyer. On tap for you today, we'll look at the full schedule for the Rams as the A-10 schedule was announced last week, an update on the recruiting trail for the upcoming class of 26, a look at the first week of practice at the Ropes Hill Gym, and my full interview with former assistant coach Mike DePauli as we revisit some of the Bacora days and a look back at those COVID years on the Rose Hill campus. It's going to be a good one. I can't wait for you guys to hear that interview. It was so much fun doing it. All right, let's get into it. A lot to talk about. Let's start with the recruiting. Coach MacPaio's staff is locked in on Stepanek guard Hassan Qureshi. Manny Rodriguez Radio with Infinity Sports Network on X said last week, assistant coach Ryan Hyland joined John Calipari and Arkansas coaches for a practice last week. Fordham's been recruiting Qureshi relentlessly and stated that he's 24/7 Sports' 10th best senior in the state of New York. Last year, he averaged 11 points, 3 assists, and 5 rebounds a game. So interested to see him come on the squad. I talked about him in the previous podcast episodes. Arkansas was there for some of his teammates there. That Stepanek team has got some loaded talent. So interesting to see what happens there. But I like to mention that they had an eye on Qureshi again. So I think that he's a huge target. We'll see what the recruiting trail leads to on that front. On Spotify, I asked if you guys if the Zarik Nutter roster hiccup scared you. Two people answered and said, yes, it did. It did for me as well, so I'm not lying to you about that. Each week, I put up out on each episode to get some viewer and listener feedback. I would love it if you answered some more, and then I can read some of those answers on the podcast. So that's on Spotify. Try to translate it as well to Apple and on X and some other platforms as well. So I'll get into asking more polls. I think it's fun getting some of your responses out there and get some input because that's what I'm all about, including the fans. The full A-10 slate has been released for the men's basketball schedules, and not surprisingly, Fordham has a few nationalized televised games on USA Network, but none on Friday ESPN. Fordham faces 5 teams twice: Davidson, LaSalle, Rhode Island, St. Bonaventure, and VCU. Other ones to note, the opener is with Dayton on the road for New Year's Eve. I'd love to see them start the new year with a win there. St. Louis on the road January 14th. I'll be at that game, so I'll definitely provide a lot of insight for that one. As well as Senior Day, March 7th, against URI, a Jameer Tripp revenge game. So those are some games to note there. The full schedule, I'll have a link to that if you haven't seen it yet in the comments on the episode so you can review all of that. On socials this week, we had a lot of updates on the first week of practice. WFUV sports director Joe Henry took to X and said this about the practice, the first one. He said, quote, high energy, coachable group, they all want to be here. He mentioned Lesman was the first player he mentioned, the transfer from Harvard. He said he's shockingly athletic, gets out fast, and finishes with authority on fast breaks. Ruhr Akar is special. MacPaio said that he's hit 4 game winners in their last 5 practices. MacPaio says, quote, he's our best NBA prospect, and he doesn't even know it. He comes to Rose Hill from Basketball Australia's Center of Excellence. MacPaio's done a lot of recruiting with Australian prospects, and Carr reminds me of Thon Maker, if you remember him, first-round pick with the Bucks back in 2016, tons of length, just can shoot the ball, aggressive. I like that in those players, can be really a top forward in the league. I really like that, hearing that about the younger guys that you may not know about and see their development. I love hearing about that. He was also able to get this quote from senior DeJour Reeves, quote, we came in here high intensity. I mean, if you want to be here, you're going to be here. If you don't, then you got to hit the road. And when I talked to Jaden Daly in the last previous podcast about DeJour Reeves, this is the leadership he was talking about. A guy who's not beating around the bush. I want to win. I want to have the best players on the floor, and let's get them out there. This is what I like to hear from a senior transfer coming in and wanting to be the guy and have the ball in his hands in crunch time. And here's Coach right now talking with Sports Information Director Joe DeBari. Here's a clip from that interview on Fordham Athletics' YouTube page about that practice.
You know what? We the guys that stayed have really great hearts and are really like-minded to the guys that we recruited. They have good character, and that's one thing. You know, we've been dropping bricks every time that we accomplish something as a program and as a team, this year's team. And today we dropped the unselfishness brick, and we kind of just like we're building the foundation. And so there's a really that's a really encouraging sign. This group's unselfish. They seem to get along, and I think that usually happens if you recruit like-minded character. So it's going well. We got a lot of work to do connecting and learning how to play together. There's a lot of work to do, but as far as off the court and the way that these guys commiserate together, it's very good.
Always love to get coaches' insight. We're working on trying to get him on the podcast as well. Joe Budzelik with the Stretching the Floor blog also wrote a lot about this team. I'll put a comment with his link on the article at the bottom of this as well, so you can read about the practice. I won't go into everything, but he said coach will run a European style offense and not have a traditional point guard style run offense, and we'll get everyone involved on defense. He said that coach is working to limit medium and long range shots and isn't trying to force turnovers like previous Ergo teams were in the past. He mentioned that coach said that they don't have true size with their bigs, but they have length, and they're trying to use it to their advantage with switching. I like that, switching with the guards and the forwards, so they make sure that the bigs just basically aren't left to die there down low. So I like this, especially with so much length on the wings, you got to execute on that. It's a great read, and I appreciate the deep dive into it. Haven't seen a preview like this in a while this early in the season, so I had to give a shout out to Joe for his work, and I'll put that link in the article. All right, that's some of the quick hitters. My interview with former coach Mike DePaoli coming up next. I'm so happy to welcome in this coach as my next guest, a 2007 graduate of the College of St. Rose, helping the Golden Knights qualify for two NCAA Division II tournaments, served as the team captain his senior year, went on to become a grad assistant at Hofstra, and then coming to Fordham in 2010 and took on a bunch of roles in his 11 years at the Rose Hill Gym and campus as director of basketball operations, assistant coach, and even interim head coach in 2021. He's now been at Hofstra for the last 2 years and was just named associate head coach last week. Coach Mike DePaoli, thanks for joining me. Appreciate you.
Hey, Donnie. I appreciate it, man. Good to be back and talking with you.
How's the offseason been?
There's not a lot of offseason anymore. You know, with the current landscape in college basketball, there's just such tremendous turnover from year to year. Even if you're at places that have success, and it has nothing to do with that. I think Baylor went to the Sweet 16 last year and lost all 13 scholarship players. So it's busy. You know, recruitments in general are a lot. They're time consuming. You invest a lot in them. So the amount of turnover, you know, is it's time consuming. So, but good off season, man. Three young kids, so they keep me active. Soccer games, t-ball games, dance recitals. So all good stuff, man.
That's awesome. And just going to, a lot of people don't know the balance between being a dad and a coach. You got to juggle a lot of things out there, don't you?
Yeah, so it's funny. Someone told me a long time ago, it's not work-life balance, it's work-life integration. And for me, I have a fantastic wife who, they don't miss a home game. And, you know, she loads up three kids and loads them up for the games, and they live it. my son's favorite color is blue because Hofstra's blue. So yeah, it is a lot, but they're here a lot, and Speedy's awesome with that, which is makes it great for me. Is my kids run around the office, they're in the practice gym, they're in the bounce house, so it's good. It's all good stuff, man.
That's awesome. I mean, creating family culture is what it's all about, and I feel like you did that at Fordham. First position you took was director of basketball operations for 5 to 6 years. It's really a do-it-all, you know, job, managing program practice plans, scouting reports. Many would call it a thankless job, but what was that like? You know, what's that role like?
Yeah, so it's It's funny because I was here, and then 25 TP brought me with him to. I was 25 years old. TP, we go to Fordham, and 2 months in, John Corso left to be the AD at St. Dominic's, God rest his soul, and then I become the ops guy, which was awesome of TP. But it's to your point, it's a thankless job. It's more, I say all the time, it's like the director of problems. It's not director of operations. It's you're just constantly trying to stay one step ahead of things that could go wrong in the program. And the TP was, he was great. Like he was like, listen, because he knew I wanted to coach. Some guys are ops guys, they want to be administrative people. And he said to me, just make sure all the administrative stuff is really, really tight, and you can do as much basketball stuff as you want to do, which was great of him. But yeah, you're trying to stay one step ahead of everything because you're the one really running the program. And for me, one thing I was trying to do in that role, I think you need to star in your role. Like I think a lot of young coaches want to be head coaches and they want to have their voice heard and do all this stuff. And it's like, dude, that's not your job right now. Your job is to star in your role. And at that time for me, starring in my role was taking stuff off the assistant coach's plate, taking stuff off the head coach's plate so they could focus on coaching and recruiting. And for me, whether that was, academics, whether that was financial aid, whether that's, Ramtown, whatever it is, stuff that we can do to take off their plates to allow our program to function at a higher level. Because I do think the best organizations function when people are trying to take stuff off people's plate to allow them to grow rather than to add stuff onto their plate because they don't want to do this or they're not capable of doing certain things. So it's a stressful job. I used to wake up sometimes and be like a nightmare that the bus wasn't there or we showed up at the wrong day to a gym or whatever it may be. So I still remember it was my first time doing it. I'm 25 years old. We're oh man, I forget where we were, but I got the pregame meal all set up. I'm there 45 minutes early, the room set up. And TP was very specific with what he wanted. And they threw in an additional dish for the pregame meal. It was like chicken piccata or something like that. And he walks up to me and I'm waiting for him to, get my slap on the back. And he was like, Naps, it was my nickname. He just called me Naps. He's Naps, what's going on? Why do we have chicken piccata out right now? So it's like, I can't do anything right, but yeah, it's a thankless job, but it does allow you, I'll say this for me, and the goal is obviously one day to be a head coach. And for me, I'm thankful to have done it. I came up, I was a GA, I was a video guy, I was an ops guy, I was an assistant coach, I was an interim head coach. I've done every position, so it allows relatability for me for anyone who's in that position to have a level of appreciation for what they do. But also, I can kind of talk to them about it because I've done it before. There's nothing that these guys have done, these young guys have done that I didn't do. So whether that's, taking out the garbage before an official visit, whether that's planning a bus trip, whether that's putting together a scouting report, whether that's, working with the guards in practice, whether that's game planning, recruiting, like I've kind of had my foot in everything because of the way I've came up. So I'm thankful for that.
That's amazing. I mean, a lot of people just want to become the head coach or just want to, get to the top role versus work their way up like you have. And I have tremendous respect for that because, like you said, you can relate to everyone when you have those conversations. And I think that that really does have an impact when you're, running a staff or running a team. So I just truly appreciate you going into that. And one thing is you were basketball ops and a coach, part of two separate coaching regimes, TP and Coach Neubauer. What was that like? I mean, obviously they're different coaches, different philosophies, but doing that with two different styles, what was that experience like?
It was a great experience. And in terms of, I think, your job as an assistant coach is to help your head coach's vision come to life. And so when I was there with TP, we were trying to bring, what we had at Hofstra at the time to life up at Rose Hill. And I do think we were really close to that happening. I think if we had gotten one more year, I really think the tide would have turned. It was a heavy lift. There were things we probably wish we knew. We knew then what we know now in terms of when we got there, in terms of some time management stuff. And TP will be the first one to tell you that. But I think we were 1 year away from really turning it. If you look, at our recruiting at the end, we were recruiting at an extremely, extremely high level. John Sevier was a top 100 player in the country, 98th in the country, beat out Pittsburgh and West Virginia to get him. Then we get Eric Pascal, who's the NEPSAC player of the year as a true high school senior who's 17 years old. He's coming and we beat out, I mean, everyone in the country to get him. You have Mandel Thomas, you have Antoine Anderson, you have Christian Zengfelder, you have Joe Chartouni, who was coming in that following year, Jesse Bunting. Like we had Ryan Rooms, like we had in Atlantic 10, a high-end Atlantic 10 roster there at the end. So, but yeah, so then you go, you transition to that with working for Jeff, and you don't get two more different people than TP and Jeff. And both had different strengths, you know, both prioritized different things. So again, it was my job when, you know, you make the decision to stay on with Jeff and get offered that job is, all right, now you have to try and help his vision come to life. It's not, you know, I can't live in the past. I need to be 10 toes down and be present and try and, you know, work as hard as I can for him now to help this happen here. And part of it for me was Fordham's a really special place. It was a special place for me. I tremendously enjoyed my experience there. I'm a local kid. I grew up going to Fordham team camp when Nick Makarchik was the coach. So I go back a ways with it. And I think for me, it was, it hadn't been done there. And for me, the allure and the love of the challenge of like, let's make this happen here was real for me. And, you know, I think Ergo kind of, it did happen that one year and good for Keith. And hopefully, you know, Mike can make it happen up there now. Cause I do think it's a special place with a rabid fan base. I do think in today's landscape, Fordham's well positioned in the NIL world because of, you know, things that have changed, but their alumni base, their donor base is real and they're passionate and they really want to see it happen. So, with all that being said, staying on two different regimes was it had its challenges, but man, it was really beneficial to see two different ways of doing things and really be immersed in it.
The one thing that's not different though is the Rose Hill gym. That place is special. You know, facilities have grown and gotten better over the years, but what you were mentioning just a couple things, but when it comes to the history and what that building means, it's an amazing place to watch and play basketball. What's maybe your favorite memory from there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the Rose Hill gym, everyone talks about it being a disadvantage. I find it a tremendous advantage. I think that what you just need to do is fill it every night. That's for me, what the focus was on is not, we're not trying to build a new gym. We're trying to fill Rose Hill gym. And if you look at that place when it's loud and it's electric, it's a tremendous home court advantage. So, I think that's some of these people who build these big arenas. If you look right now, like Baylor and Texas doing, they're actually downsizing their arenas to create that college feel to it. So Rose Hill gym was definitely never the issue, especially now in the NIL world where facilities are de-emphasized. It's not about that as much anymore. So, but favorite memory is easy for me. I think it was game, if I have this right, it was game 7 or 8 of our first year there. And we're playing St. John's at home. And that St. John's team was Lavin's first year there. It was our first year at Fordham. You know, we play them on a Saturday night at Rose Hill. And, you know, I was just so happy. The environment was off. We were down 21 in the second half and came back to win the game. And that St. John's team went to the NCAA tournament that year in Lav's first year. They were a terrific team. And the shot Brenton Butler made, I think there was 5 seconds left when he made an elbow pull-up, was the loudest environment I've ever been in. And I've coached at Kansas. I've coached at Duke. I've coached at Purdue. I've coached at Arkansas. Like, it was the loudest gym I've ever been in. And it was, again, happy for Brenton. I was happy for Fordham. You know, I wish we could have maintained the momentum. I think that was our 6th win of the year in year one. And I think we won 7 games on the year. But that game, just beating St. John's, and I'm local, so St. John's is always, you know, the team in the area. And then we finally got them to come to Rose Hill. So that was awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think they'll make a trip. Excuse me. I don't think they're going to make a trip back there anytime soon, yeah. You know, after what happened then. And literally everyone I've talked to has said that same exact thing. So I appreciate you bringing down that and going through memory lane. Another memory is COVID. When that all happened, what was I mean, for a player is one thing, but for a coaching staff and trying to prepare and recruit and game plan, what was that like?
Yeah, so it starts with, we beat GW in the first round of the A10 tournament, and we played a really good game, and so we're getting ready to game plan to play Duquesne in the next round, and we had lost to Duquesne at their place in overtime, and then we lost to them at our place by 4 points. I think it was 58-54, but like it was a tight game the whole way. So we really thought we could beat Duquesne in the next round. So we're really game planning. And I still remember Dennis Felton and myself, some of the video guys, they have the video up, we're watching it in our ballroom getting ready for the game. And it's slowly, the COVID momentum slowly starts to pick up where all of a sudden Rudy Gobert tests positive. And then all of a sudden they run on the court. I believe it was an OKC for the Thunder game. And excuse me, they canceled the game. And then all of a sudden it's like the Pac-12 tournament shut down. And then the Big Ten tournament shut down, but the Big East is still on for the next day. The A-10's still on for the next day. And so we're like, you're game planning, but at the same time, you're like, are we gonna play this game? And so anyway, we're up late, we game plan, we're prepared, and we're walking down for our morning walkthrough. And because we were the 8:30 game that night at the Barclays. And so we're probably whatever time we're walking through, 11 a.m. or something like that, getting ready. And UMass and VCU were the first game, and they had already went over to there. So I was like, oh, maybe I think it looks like we're going to play today. We are getting ready to start our walkthrough, and David Cox, who was the head coach at Rhode Island at the time, pokes his head in, and I've known him for a while, and he said, it's over. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, this is before our players got there. I said, it's over. They're shutting the whole thing down. And I still remember it because when you're playing the A10 tournament in Brooklyn, everyone stays at the Brooklyn Marriott. So, or most teams do. Some people stay at the Ritz-Carlton, in the financial district, but probably, 11, 12 teams are staying at the Brooklyn Marriott. And you walk outside and you see the news start to spread. And we had seniors on our team from Antoine Portley is the one. Ertan Gazi was a senior on that team. And first of all, we have to tell them now as a group. So that's hard to be like, your career is, it's over. And that's hard. And then you leave our ballroom and you're walking through the hallways. And I still remember seeing it was a Duquesne player just hugging his dad, crying. And you start walking through, you just see the disbelief. Then you see VCU and UMass coming back up the escalators in their game uniforms because they got pulled off the court. And it went from a surreal scene. It went from a sad, disappointed feeling you have to this is ending like this. To like, oh shit, this is real. I have a pregnant wife at home. Like, let's make sure these kids get back to campus safely. And we got them back to campus safely. And we met with the team and we said, listen, we will probably be back here in a couple of weeks. Little did we know at the time what was coming. And then it was get them out of there safely. And then I remember we met as a staff briefly and we were like, all right, we'll stay connected here. And at that time, I just wanted to get home. My wife was. She was 7 months pregnant at the time, and I wanted to get home and make sure everything was good. And then, you live the next. I mean, we didn't get back to campus. We left campus, I think it was like whatever it was, March 10th. We don't get back to campus until like mid-August. And you're meeting players at the time, and they had to do a 2-week quarantine. We're putting them up in a hotel up in Elmsford, up in Westchester. So you're meeting them and their families after being via Zoom, doing what we're doing now for months. And you're putting them there, everyone's masked up, and they have to spend 2 weeks in a hotel in Westchester before they can get to campus. And then the hard part about that season more than anything else was the constant change. Like one thing we want to do in college basketball as college basketball coaches, we love to prepare. And you're supposed to play a game. Like our first game was supposed to be Rick Pitino's first game in college basketball, back in college basketball, was supposed to be Ione at Fordham. And then whether they popped a positive or we popped a positive, something happened. But our players ended up spending 60 days in quarantine that year throughout the whole season. And the biggest battle that year, quite frankly, was trying to keep everyone in a positive mind state. And the reason I say that, it was there was they were there was no college life with it. And what I mean by that is there's no fans. Their kids couldn't go out to a party. Their families couldn't come to games and go to dinner after. So there was no outlet for them. And it was a frustrating time. If they stepped outside their dorm room without wearing a mask, we get a phone call. You got to call and reprimand them. And it was a lot on the kids. And we tried to do our best to make sure. My whole thing was like, let's just make this, guys, we're going to make this a positive experience. There's people who have it far worse than what we're going through right now. We get a chance to play college basketball. And the big word I just kept talking to them about was perspective. We have to keep perspective with this whole thing. We're going to have fun with this. We're going to do the best we can. We're going to game plan like hell for GW. And then all of a sudden, the day before the game, we're going to find out that Dayton's coming to play us. And we're going to be ready to play Dayton. We're going to do the best we can with a very fluid landscape. So, yeah, it was a challenging basketball season.
Yeah, just go a little more in that off season, because literally from, you know, March, which you know there, till the off season, to then you guys didn't play a first game till the end of the year in December.
Yeah.
There was just so much that was going on. I mean, was it just basically Zooms? Was it?
Yeah, we literally put our zone defense in, and we don't, you know, we talked about defensive, but we don't play a lot of zone, but we put our zone defense in that year via Zoom. Because we were in quarantine, and we came back and we played GW. It was late December. We didn't play a non-league game that whole year, and we came back and played GW because we were in quarantine. This guy pops positive. This guy pops positive, and you know, anyone who's in contact just shut down for 2 weeks. And so literally, we played GW. We had four practices going into that game, so it's just like, it's frustrating as a coach, because when I say four practices, we had practices, but we had four straight days of practice leading into that game. But before that, we had been shut down for like 3 weeks. So it's really hard to, you know, because you want to coach them hard and you want to do this, but you have to understand that, you know, are we in game shape? Are we tight with our coverages? Do they know the actions like the back of the hand? Do they know the reads on the actions, the progressions? And the answer is no, because they just don't have the game reps, especially the new guys. You know, so, yeah, it was challenging.
So another challenge, you know, you probably not comfortable. You're comfortable in your assistant role. And then all of a sudden Jeff gets dismissed. You're the interim head coach. You get your first win February 6th, 2021, you beat LaSalle. Mm-hmm. Oh, what was that experience like?
Yeah. So, well, anytime you become an interim head coach, it's a bittersweet feeling. Like, you're excited the chance to lead a program, but it comes from a place of you as a program, you've underperformed. And I don't like that. You know, I take it very personally. When TP got fired, I took that very, very personal, because, you know, you're committed to him. You want to make this happen. He gave me an opportunity to be a part of the staff. And the same feeling is with Jeff. So you don't like the feeling of doing it that way. And then you kind of like have to like kind of take a breath. I still remember, you know, I didn't know it was happening. And we were meeting, myself, Dennis Felton, and Anthony Evans were meeting about how we wanted to defend. It was Duquesne again, how we were getting ready to play Duquesne and how we wanted to guard them. And Jeff was walking, I don't know if you know where the film room is, he was walking upstairs and he said, I have a meeting with Eddie. And we thought it was going to be Eddie Cullip. We thought it was going to be about scheduling. And, you know, he came back downstairs and we were meeting about defensive game plan. And he said, all right, we got to meet in my office real quick before we get back to this. I said, okay. We went there and he told us that he'd been dismissed and that I was the interim head coach. And that's how I found out that morning. It was the day before we played Duquesne. And the funny part was, so then we have a team meeting. Jeff speaks to the team first and leaves. And then Eddie Cole goes to speak to the team. And Joel Soriano, who's one of my favorites, he's an emotional human, stands up and walks out of the meeting. And so my first thought is, well, now I'm an interim head coach and our best player just left. I said he doesn't want to play anymore. But then, you know, our staff, whoever felt or whoever it was, Ev went downstairs and got him and we spoke and we, you know, and then we went off and we played the next night. We actually went out and had a good practice. We played the next game again. We played the next night against Duquesne, got our doors blown off. And we were probably all a little uncomfortable, whether it was the players, myself. And what kind of hit me after that game was I'm trying to think of the best way to say this was, all right, we're in this situation now. And we're going to roll up our sleeves and immerse ourselves in this. And I still remember I went to we came back after that and we actually were getting ready to play UMass and we didn't have a good practice after the Duquesne game. And, you know, you're in the middle of COVID, so you're managing that. And the next meeting, I went to the next meeting and I had 14 garbage bags the next day to start practice. And I told everyone I said, you know, I understand I wasn't the head coach, you know, 48, 72 hours ago. I didn't know this was coming. You didn't know this was coming, but we are going to play really hard. And we are going to represent Fordham right now the way I feel we should represent them. And that's by playing with maximum effort, you know, maximum connectivity. We're going to be positive. We're going to play this game with joy. We're going to do all those things. And I said to everyone, I said, and if you're not willing to do that, I have a garbage bag for every one of you right now. And you go downstairs and take your stuff. I understand it's a hard year in COVID, but we're not going to sit here and make excuses. We're not going to talk about COVID. We're not going to talk about a new coach. We're not talking about any of it. Okay, we're going to be 10 toes down where we are right now. We're going to be present. Okay, and if you don't like that, you can take garbage bag and leave. And that helped. It helped me, I think, be like, all right, this is what's happening now. Right now, I am the head coach. And I told them, for as long as I'm the head coach, we're going to play really damn hard. And then we went out and we actually really fought up at UMass. I think we lost by 4 or 5 up there, 59-54. And then we come back and we beat LaSalle. And we had positive momentum going. And then I, you know, I made a mistake in terms of we were getting ready to go down and play George Mason. And I was so cognizant of the fact like we had gotten better. We went from getting our doors blown off to playing tough at UMass, which is what I want. I just want us to play tough, have fun, compete, all that stuff. We beat LaSalle. And it was a total team effort. And I wanted to keep our trajectory going like this. And I made a mistake as the head coach. And we practiced really hard on Monday and Tuesday for over 2 hours, which you should never do in the middle of February. But I wanted them to not be satisfied. And we were down at halftime, 33-27, down at George Mason. And we played a tough first half against them. And they were good. They were loaded. I mean, if you look who was on that George Mason team, Jordan Miller, you know what I mean? Arduro, they had AJ Lewis. They had a tremendous team. And the second half, we just ran out of gas. And it was my fault because we had practiced too much. And then we get shut down again after that. And then the proud thing for me, though, is we got shut down again. And we're off for 2.5, 3 weeks. And we're getting ready to play the A-10 tournament. And then they end up flipping the men's and women's tournament. They moved ours up, which I was frustrated with because I thought at least we'd have a week to kind of get back and play a game before the tournament. I mean, we were literally having the guys run around campus in the snow, like laps around eddies and around campus to keep in some kind of game shape. And we went down and we played GW and we played them real tough, man. We played real tough for a team that hadn't, and it was Chuba's first game back. So I was excited for him. He had been out for over a year after he tore his ACL. And we played them real tough. And if, you know, we had one player who made a mistake in a game plan, we were up two up one with under a minute left, and we went under a flare screen on Jamison Battle, who later transferred to Minnesota, and he made a three against us to beat us. And I think we lost by 2 or 3 to GW. But I was proud we fought, and that's what I wanted them to do. I wanted them to fight. I wanted them to have each other's back during a tough time. So long-winded answer, but that is, you know, kind of how everything went.
No, amazing. I feel like I never even knew any of that happened. So, you know, my mind was racing just kind of how all of that happened. That was awesome. And it's just crazy, though, like how basically college landscape was with COVID. And I think the mental thing was huge. Like you said, I think, you know, people don't realize, you know, sports and a lot of it is mental and getting in a comfort zone. And they didn't have that outlet. They didn't have that. And the change and going through all that. Now, I appreciate you bringing that up. One thing those teams were really good at, though, was defense. You know, you had some really good defensive teams. I was reading here, 2019 best defensive ranking in the KenPom era since 97, 64th best in the country. And you guys held opponents to the lowest points per game average in 36 years, 61 points per game. You're a defensive guy. What makes a good defense? What made those teams good defensive teams?
It starts with the players. You know, it starts with the players. I say all the time, like as coaches, we can have a plan and have a vision. It's their job to bring it to life. And our players really bought into the defensive side of the ball. And that started with Antoine Portley, who now works next door to me as an assistant coach here at Hofstra. But him, Joel, Chuba Ohams, Ty Perry, Kyle Rose, I mean, guys who were tough-minded kids and really bought into what we were doing, and they brought it to life. So I think for me, it's, you know, it starts the three things we talk about all the time defensively. It's max effort. Okay. It's max Leo. Leo is our term for how we communicate loud, early, and often. And then it's max discipline. which is the execution piece, which typically catches up to the effort. You have to start off with a high, high standard of effort, and then the execution can kind of come up. And I think for me, what's always attracted me to the defensive side of the ball is that's a constant. Okay. Like Bob Hurley Sr., who is the coach at St. Anthony's High School in Jersey City, told me one time, he said, offense is like the stock market. Your defense is like your bonds. And the stock market's going to fluctuate night to night, but you need to know what your rate of return is every single night on your defense. And, you know, defense allows you to win every game. Okay. Your offense will determine by how much you win by, but your defense is what allows you to win games every single night. It should travel. It should show up every night, and it's a controllable. So for me, I think that was always really attracted me to that side of the ball. And I think, you know, that team, it's funny, they were terrific. They were 64th, like you said, in KenPom. And then the next year, Kyle Neptune came in and totally blew it out of the water. They were awesome defensively that year that Nep was there. So, you know, one day a peacock, next day a feather duster, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff. But Kyle did a great job. And that, you know, that team was a really good defensive unit. We were good, not great the COVID year. Partially of that is, you know, it was the season and what that was in terms of being able to install and game plan. We are a scout preparation team. And when you spend 4 days preparing for whoever, LaSalle, and then you find out you're playing UMass, it does make it difficult. But yeah, I think when the players take ownership of the defensive side of the ball, when they can start having fun with it, when they can start understanding why it's so important, that's when it really comes to life.
Two guys, you know, you mentioned Kyle Rose, and then I also thought Cologne Navarro was another one as well. He literally would take a charge anytime, you know, and looking at Kyle Rose, how he developed, I don't know if you followed it after, you know, of his game and everything, he became a defensive wizard. You know, when you saw like, especially Kyle, when he first got to campus, skinny, lanky guy wearing these glasses, whatever, and then becoming, you know, the guy on campus, did you ever expect that?
Yeah. So great question. Kyle Rose is one of the best stories there is, because Kyle Rose had nothing coming out of high school, nothing. And we took him late and I watched him off game film. To be honest, it was another coach in the league who I'm friends with in the A-10 said, listen, we like him. We can't take him. He sent me his film. And, you know, you talk to his coach, Coach O'Connell down there at Eleanor Roosevelt's, great coach, really good guy. We still stay in touch. And yeah, Kyle and I still stay in touch. We still text. His mother, Tamika, really, really good people. But if you look, he has a pinned tweet on his Twitter account where someone had tweeted about him. Kyle Rose is going to be a guy who didn't have anything going on out of high school, but then all of a sudden, 4 or 5 years later, everyone's going to say, oh my gosh, this kid's a terrific player, something along those lines. So my point is, he saw it before everyone else did. And Kyle's greatest skill is his self-belief. He has such confidence in himself, and he willed himself into being the player that he became at Fordham. And I think, and I'm wrong here, now he gets this asterisk next to this because of the COVID year, but I think he has played in the most games in Fordham basketball history. So mm-hmm. To go from a kid who literally had nothing coming out of high school to a kid who plays the most games in Fordham history is awesome. And he stayed at the same school for that time, in a time when people leave. So his loyalty to Fordham, the loyalty Fordham showed him, man, he repaid it. And that's what it's all about. So
that's the one thing you mentioned that I wanted to talk about on the next topic was, you know, he saw it in himself that he could be something. He had that confidence. When you are recruiting and you're looking at game film, or you go to talk to the kid, or you go, how can you, you know, pencil that out in someone? How can you spot that?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like, recruiting is not an exact science, right? Mm-hmm. So as I say this with all the humility in the world, I've been fortunate to recruit some really good players. I've also recruited some players that didn't pan out the way I envisioned it. But the one thing, like, when you talk to Kyle Rose on the phone, or you talk to, like, who we've had players here, Aaron Estrada or Brandon Frazier up at Fordham, they have a chip on their shoulder. And, like, man, that matters. Like, when this matters to them, when basketball matters to them, when they love it, when they want to get coached hard, when they have a chip on their shoulder, like, that has always really resonated with me. Like, I feel like I connect well with guys like that. Maybe I carry that with myself a lot. But you talk about Kyle Rose, chip on your shoulder. Like, he had something to prove every single day he walked on that court. Even Joel Soriano was a totally different recruitment than Kyle Rose. Joel, who was on that same team, who brought so much toughness and energy and enthusiasm, was it, you know, we recruited him for years, you know, and he turned down a lot of stuff to come to Fordham. But he had the same thing. He had a toughness. He had an energy about him. He had a chip on his shoulder. It mattered to him. And even when he was at St. John's, just how much better he got. He's an All-American at St. John's. So, yeah, I mean, so for me, looking at that, like, do you have a chip on your shoulder? And then it's more the basketball technical side of it in terms of, you know, what translatable skills do you have? What's important to your head coach? Is it shooting? Is it toughness? Is it IQ? Is it size? Is it length? Is it wingspan? So you have to know what's important to your head coach. But yeah, that chip on your shoulder, Brad Stephen calls it competitive character. Like, once the basketball stuff is fit, like, how's their competitive character? Do they love to compete? And are they a high character person who's going to be a great teammate? So that's kind of what I've always looked for. And again, that's maybe it's because that's what resonates with me. But I knew those kind of guys typically do well. They overachieve. I love overachievers. Antoine Portley was an overachiever. Even guys we've had here, Aaron Estrada, Tyler Thomas, players of the year, they're overachievers because of how much this mattered to them, how much time they put into it.
Brandon Frazier, I felt like, was very underrated. People don't give him enough credit, or his name doesn't go up in there because of, there wasn't many wins during his time. But is there some player that still, you know, sticks with you, or you know, is an underdog, or one of your favorite guys that you talk to? What's some of your memories there?
Yeah, a lot. You know, they're all, you know, it's like, you know, someone, I heard a coach say one time when they asked him, who's your favorite player? It's like asking you to pick your favorite kid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you love them all for different reasons. But Brandon Frazier is one that sticks out. I actually saw him this summer. He's doing great. He's playing overseas right now in Asia. He's still playing and making a lot of money. And Brandon's another one. When we took him to Fordham, he was supposed to come to us here at Hofstra. And when we took him to Fordham, everyone said, you're crazy. He's never going to be able to play there. Brandon, at the time we left, and this is, I left in 21, he was sixth all time in scoring. He was second all time in assists. Now, did we win as much as we wanted to? No. But that kid was as loyal. He loved Fordham. You know, it was never once about him leaving. And again, like, he's still playing to this day, making, you know, great money. But Brandon, I mean, Ryan Rooms is a terrific kid. Brian right now is trying to get into, he wants to get into college athletics and on the administrative side. So he's going to come out here in a couple of weeks and meet with our athletic director. You know, they're all, I mean, yeah, Eric Pascal, Jesse Bunting. Jesse holds a special place. You know, he had a stroke during his senior year. Mm-hmm. Went through a lot. You know, he's doing great now, married. He has a kid on the way. Antoine Partley, who I talked about, Chuba Ohams, Joel, all these guys, they hold special places to you because I think as a coach, you always really appreciate when someone chooses you, if that makes sense, with their future, and you want to do right by them. And, you know, I think the one thing for me, I've always said as a coach, is when a player leaves their time with us at Fordham, with us at Hofstra, I just want them to be able to look at us and be like, it was exactly what you told me it would be. Because that, at least to me, means we were men of our word and we followed through on what we said we were going to do. And that's why we do our best not to overpromise and underdeliver. But you try and promise all of them that you're going to challenge them every single day. You're going to be really hard on them because the standard's high. What we want is on the other side of hard. So we have to teach you how to handle hard. But then as soon as practice is over, our arm is around you, man, and we have your back. And that's always the thing that I kind of promise these guys, because those are controllables. I can't promise you're going to be player of the year. I can't promise you that you're going to be the all-time leading scorer at Fordham. But I can tell you is we're going to be with you and have your back every step of the way. And so for me, when they leave, as long as they say we followed through on that, I'm happy with that.
I appreciate that. It's awesome stories right there. And what do you like? You've been in the college game now, you know, for quite some time. What do you like and dislike, you know, of the direction it's going in?
Well, that's a loaded question. yeah, for us. So Speedy's great to work for here. We had lunch with Jay Wright last week. And it's, there's a lot of former coaches, whether it be Jay Wright, Coach K, Bob McKillop, Nick Saban, who got out because what it was is not what it is right now in terms of culture. And when I say culture coming from players, like when you got to campus as a freshman, you just do what the seniors do. Like, you know, I was listening to a story someone was telling me the other day, TJ McConnell, when he was out at Arizona, he threw Casey Stanley, who was like one of the highest rated freshmen, out of practice. And Sean Miller was like, yeah, like, get out. That's culture to me because it's player led. And so now these players right now, they're trying to learn your culture and lead your culture at the same time. So culture has never been more, has never had to come from coaches more than it ever has right now, because we're the consistent thing here from year to year, if that makes sense. Where it used to be the players, you got to grow up with your players. You know, for me, like when I was a kid, like Bobby Hurley at Duke, like you grew up watching Bobby Hurley at Duke. You know what I mean? And that's just an example because that was my childhood, but like that doesn't happen so much anymore. I was talking to, it was at breakfast this morning with a donor of ours, and it's, we were talking, I say, you used to be able to kind of go with them, the player, through their college journey from A to Z, from the recruitment to the end of the career at your university and then after. And now it's, some of it's A to B, and because you only get them for 9 months, some of them, and you do your best to pour into them and not be transactional and still try and be transformational. Cause I do still think that's why we should be doing this. You're still dealing with 18 to 22 year olds who need mentorship, who need guidance. Now they're getting paid a lot of money, and there's different challenges that come with that, but they're still 18 to 22 year old kids. And whether you're making $1 million or you're, you know, making Pell money 5-6 years ago, you still need direction. And again, it comes with different challenges for certain right now. It's a lot less basketball. It's a lot more fundraising. It's a lot more dealing with agents and stuff. There's pluses and minuses to all that. The one thing I will say is we can either sit here and complain about what it was and what it's not anymore, or you can adapt. And I think here at Hofstra, we have great leadership with our AD, and you know what I mean? I think Fordham's in good hands with their AD. I don't know him yet. You know, I know St. John's is in great hands. Eddie Cole's a dear friend of mine. Like, when you have good leadership right now at the top, who's going to get in the trenches with you, that's really important.
One thing, Fordham known for, men for others and giving back and being a part of the community. You've always been doing that. You've always wanted to give back, whether it was toy drives, A10 Connecting the Change, scholarship foundations. Why is it so important to not only be either a good player or coach, but a good person?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that goes back to, for me, for how I was raised, you know, from, you know, my mother's a very faithful person. And for me, that was one of the biggest connections I made when I was at Fordham, you know, like during the fall when our schedule was more routine, and during the season, it was hard. But I mean, I would go to daily mass in Blue Chapel, and there's no like better way to start your day than going to 8:30 mass. And you're back in the office by 8:55. And, yeah, so like that mattered to me, being in the holistic approach of this whole thing of developing. Bobby Knight said, we don't need better basketball players, we need better people. And for me, the game of basketball has always been a vehicle to help people become better people, if that makes sense, because that's what it was for me. I had a high school coach who stepped into my life and changed the trajectory of my life. And for me, I'm trying to pay that forward the best I can right now. So a lot of that is, and this goes back to Tom Pokora. He used to say, if you don't use your platform the right way, we're wasting our platform. And right now, as Division I coaches, we have a platform in our communities where we can make a difference, whether that's in Hempstead or that's in the Bronx. And that was always something that mattered to me. And I wanted to see our players see me do that, because you do need to pay it forward. You do need to have an attitude of gratitude, to be grateful, to be where you are. And again, try and help people, provide modeling for them. Like, it's important for our players to get out there. They get so much stuff handed to them. It's important that to go down to, you know, speak at Bronxdale High School, or to go to the South Bronx and go to Soundview and read to kids down there, or do food drives. Like, that stuff mattered to me, especially at a place like, you know, communities that need people like that. The Bronx needs people like our players to step into that community and lead. And just like here at Hofstra, Hempstead needs these players, and you try and tell them that. And it also allows it to be bigger than basketball. You know what I mean? I think, you know, Brian Harrington, you know, is a great guy. He does a lot of stuff. He helped at Fordham with us. We used to go up to, there's a hospital up in Westchester for pediatric cancer patients. And he used to set us to go up there all the time. And I asked him, he was on the 85 Villanova championship team as a walk-on. And I said, how did you get into this? And he said, it was Rolly Massimino, that when I was there, he brought us to do stuff like this, and it just stayed with me. So I thought that was really cool. And maybe it stays with all the players, maybe it doesn't, but I do fully believe in you need to develop, you know, being a man and woman for others is at the forefront of all this stuff. If we're not here to serve others, then what are we doing? And whether that's a coach or a player, that matters. So
beautiful message right there. Appreciate you taking time. One question though, I was very big on social media, and I, you know, was wearing old school gear. I got a shirt. I don't know if you ran the Twitter account, but I got a shirt from you guys one time. You're like, here's the new stuff. And I still have it to this day. 10 years old. It's got holes in it and stuff, but I wear it like crazy.
Well, tell Coach Bankei you need some new swag, man. Tell him you, hey, Donnie, it's what makes Fordham special. I say this to people all the time. Fordham, did we have 5,000 supporters? No, but you had people who bled maroon up there. And I say to people all the time, like the Fordham people, those donors, those people up there, it's just like yourself, Donnie, they give their heart to that place. And that's what you need right now. So, you know, I'm still rooting for Fordham. I was rooting for Kyle. I was rooting for Keith. I'll root for Coach MacPayo up there. I want the place to have success. It's a special place. I know what it would mean to the people up there, you know, whether it's Mike Fitzgerald or the Armstrong Foundation, like there's good people up there who deserve success. So, I'm rooting for Fordham, and yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
We appreciate you, all the success this year, and stay in touch.
All right. Hopefully we can get Fordham on the schedule soon too. So
I know I would like that.
Yeah. All right, Don. Thanks. Appreciate you.
I want to thank Coach for his time. He really went into a lot of detail about things I haven't heard about in a while, a true inside look at a difficult time on campus. Next week, we'll have more interviews and reviews as we inch closer to the start of basketball season. I'm still working on getting a time set up with Coach and some other former players and coaches. Stay locked into my social media pages, as well as rate and review the podcast on all those platforms. Helps us get out there to some other fans, and also helps me get on more searches as people look for the podcast. Thanks for listening again, and as always, go Rams!